Welcome to the Bicast. We continue our health series with three segments scheduled so far on bisexual mental health disparities. One of our biggest health concerns is finding effective and understanding mental health care. Proper training and real understanding of bisexuality by mental health workers really needs to improve. This segment will talk about the issues bisexual women face along with the community as a whole. Our researcher, Vanessa Cantrell, searched for data specific to bisexuals and really could not find anything. We have promise of that being rectified. Dr. Hirokuchi is working with Birch, Bisexual Research Collaborative on Health, to advance bisexual-specific research. Yet the lack of hard data is a real issue when we're asking for funding and trying to develop programs. The BiStory Project is trying to collect some real groundwork data to make it available to researchers. In the meantime, we have to do what we can to help each other. So with us today, we have Morgan Fitzgibbon, a therapist who hails from right here in Portland, Oregon, and has also developed a workshop for helping bisexuals through their journey. Welcome, Morgan.
Welcome.
Hi, thank you.
Before we get started, can you tell us a little bit about yourself and your work?
Yes, definitely. So I came into my career path specifically looking to work with people kind of living outside the mainstream, particularly people with alternative sexual and relationship styles. I'd had some really valuable experiences in individual therapy as a young adult, and I wanted to be able to share that with other people. But as a bisexual and non-monogamous person, I had some maybe well-meaning but really awful experiences, particularly with couples counseling. So when I came into the field, it was really important to me to bring the valuable experiences with therapy to people in my own communities. I wanted to be a professional that people could come to without kind of being afraid of being judged or shamed or are criticized for who they are or who they're in a relationship with. So I studied clinical psychology with a specialization in LGBT affirmative therapy at Antioch University in Los Angeles. And I completed my clinical training at the LA Gay and Lesbian Center. And then I moved to Portland and began my private practice. At the beginning of this year, I began focusing a lot more of my work on bisexual people because more and more people just kept coming to me asking for bi-specific referrals, and I had nowhere to send them. I knew of just like one or two books or kind of community outlets, but mostly I had nowhere really useful to send them, so I decided that I needed to create that myself. So now I run a weekly therapy group for bisexual individuals, in addition to working with individuals and doing relationship counseling.
Very much needed. Well, I talked about this with Cameron way back, and he said, well, I found one in town. I found one.
Yeah, you know, he was my one. So apparently we were like one off referring to each other. Yeah.
It's great. I would say in D.C., in our local group, we have a few mental health professionals that are part of our local bi group. And right now I'm leading to organize themselves as really a referral service for our community, because I mean, we do events and people come asking for mental health resources, and being able to provide like at least the referral service is really, really important.
Yeah.
When people need help, they need to get it now, and sending them into the LG counselor world, I think for a lot of us, you and I, and I think many of us listening have been there and done that and felt like we weren't listened to, or we were told that, you know, we needed to choose our sexuality as opposed to being bisexual in that therapy, and that's not helpful.
I've heard several people say, and I don't know if this is necessarily true because I'm not in the therapy realm, is that when a gay or lesbian comes in with an issue like depression or something like that, they focus on treating the depression and that issue. And if a bisexual goes in, it's like, well, we need to work on your bisexual problem. And it's a different mindset, you know, and it's not helpful.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'll also ask, so you also work with mixed orientation partnerships?
And I do.
Dealing with those? Because that's another big issue for me. Like, you know, I came out like, a lot of years ago to my partner, and we had been together for a good many years when I came out, and you know, there weren't really any resources out there to help me and help her. like understand. And of course, you know, working in the bisexual community, that coming out and mixed orientation partnerships, whether they be same sex or opposite sex, is a really hard thing, and there's very few resources. And those that exist, like, you know, Straight Spout Support Network, generally aren't very helpful to maintaining that partnership post-disclosure.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it's about, you know, providing the right tools, and I think that's what we need to work on for them.
Just creating more tools and letting more people know where they are is really important.
Very much agree with you.
Our stats are stark. The bisexual community faces among the highest rates of physical and sexual abuse, including domestic suicide and severe depression. Yet finding help for our specific issues is a challenge. How did you become trained in specifically bisexual mental health needs?
It's not easy to become trained in bisexual mental health right now, even if you're actively looking for it. Like I said, I specialized in a LGBT specific clinical psychology program. Inside that program, there was a 1-day elective workshop offered on bisexuality. I think that it was a very, very basic 101 level on bisexual identity. So I can't say that I personally, as a bisexual person, took a whole lot away from that experience, except that I learned that there's not nearly enough information out there for those of us who want to work with bisexual clients. So I kind of took what I could from my grad school program. I went and looked for every book I could find, and there aren't very many, but there are some. And then I sought out all the academic research I could find, subscribed to the Journal of Bisexuality, and kind of, at least for the group that I now run, I took what I had learned about working with other queer identities and took my own personal experience as a bisexual person and as working with bisexual people, and kind of combined all of that into something that is still a work in progress, but is building and getting better. And I think that the opportunities are getting better. I'm seeing a lot more out there from other people in the field, which is good.
It's kind of why I asked the question.
Mm-hmm.
So it's basically you had to really train yourself, because there's really not anything available. Is that correct?
Unfortunately, yeah.
Yeah, and this is kind of a common theme. Wouldn't it be nice if we could get to the point where we had some funding, possibly, to include some kind of structure for the bisexual client?
Yeah.
It would be great, wouldn't it?
Definitely.
When working with bisexual women on an individual basis, what is the biggest issue you seem to run across with them?
That is a bit of a tough question, because I can't say that I've encountered one specific issue that seems particularly outstanding for bi women. I see a lot of depression and anxiety, which isn't a big surprise if you've read any research on bisexual mental health, particularly with women. But I think what I see most often is I see a lot of suppressing sexual thoughts and feelings because of partners, either because they're not out to their partner and they don't feel like there's an outlet for those sexual thoughts or feelings, or are afraid of upsetting their partner, or because their partner has made it clear that they're uncomfortable with that part of their sexual identity and feel threatened by it. And I also see a lot of concern or confusion about relationships in general and how that relationship fits in with their sexual identity, in particular talking about monogamy and non-monogamy, kind of how that fits in with where they want their relationships to go in the future.
Yeah, I would say that a lot of those things also relate to bisexual men, too.
Mm-hmm.
It's the opposite side.
Mm-hmm.
It's the opposite and same side.
Yeah, opposite and same side, yeah.
Not being able to validate your feelings and who you are with those around you is it's very damaging. It really is.
Well, it's living a lie, right? And,
yeah.
I think for a lot of us who come out in a relationship, it's about, like, trying to, like, deal with coming to your own truth. And, you know, when you do that, the ramifications of that are great. And, you know, like I said before, you know, dealing with people that have come out in mixed orientation partnerships, like I said, both same and opposite sex, these are kind of common issues that really don't have a lot of resources to support and to address. And coming around to coming out in a relationship, I read one of the studies that showed that women who come out have better mental health outcomes than women in the closet. Could you elaborate a little bit more on that? And does that make sense to, like, what you've seen in your own practice?
In some ways, I think that's an interesting statistic, because in some ways it goes counter to our ideas of why things like abuse rates can be so high. When we have partners that feel uncomfortable or threatened by their partner's bisexuality. But in general, I think that any time we can safely be more open and honest and authentic about who we are and have access to support for that, which not everyone does, then I think that always puts us in a place where we can be a little bit, be more mentally healthy and have better relationships, just because we're not having to hide. And having to carry around things like internalized biphobia and fear of rejection from our friends and family are always going to increase our rates of depression and anxiety and suicidality.
Yeah, and just see, even though, you know, many of us don't think we should feel guilty, there is that when you're hiding and there is non-approval, you do feel guilt. And guilt is a big factor in depression and anxiety when you don't feel right about yourself, that you're doing something wrong. Even though logically you know in your mind that may not be the case, that is the way you feel as a person. If you have to stay in the closet, if you have to be in the closet, I think that's one of the biggest things that it was fantastic for me, was just feeling very centered and whole, like I'm okay. Yeah.
Absolutely.
I will also add that, you know, if you're in a relationship, the one person in the world that you have to be honest to, other than yourself, is the person you're in the relationship with. And that hiding and that, not only self-dishonesty, but dishonesty with your partner is a thing that, hurts a relationship. For a lot of bi men, I'll say that we tend to come out when we have children, and we have to, and I think part of it is that we have to face our own dishonesty. And when you have kids, you have to be really honest and you have to be very truthful. And, you know, I found that for me and for a lot, at least for a lot of bi men, that's kind of a trigger in the coming out process is, you know, how are you going to raise your kids when you're lying to yourself?
You know, I work with just about everybody that comes into my office, whether they identify as bisexual or not, has come to me because they are outside the box in some way or another. And what I find as the most common thread among anybody who lives outside of the kind of heteronormative cisgender monogamous norm is that we've had so much shame layered on us for just who we are that at some point we internalize that, and then we start shaming ourselves. And I always liken that to like having a really nasty bully following you around 24 hours a day. And because when we start doing it to ourselves, we don't need anybody else to shame us at that point, because we are constantly reminded of how inherently bad we are for this one feature of who we are. And so when we feel like we've been more honest about that, that starts to dissipate. And the more we can address that shame, the less the less awful we feel and the more empowered we feel.
Yeah, I kind of liken it to a cancer that's untreated or a toothache that turns into an abscess. You know, the quicker you, the earlier you deal with it, the better the outcome. And if you let it persist, then it's going to take you.
Mm-hmm.
That's kind of a lead into the next question.
You've talked about some of it earlier, but what would you say are the underlying root causes of domestic abuse rates for bisexual women?
You know, I think that in everything I've learned about statistics in the bisexual community, this one is the one that surprised me the most. Not because I think that it shouldn't be happening. I mean, it shouldn't be happening, but not because I think that there's something specifically protective about bisexual identity, but because on the surface anyway, I have a hard time seeing, without just kind of speculating what that root cause is. I suspect, just anecdotally, that certainly objectification of bisexual women is an issue. I know that sexual assault rates are high, but I really don't feel like I can speak to that with any good factual knowledge. It just kind of, it blows me away, and I don't know what the reason is.
I'll just do it from my viewpoint, because I am a domestic violence victim more than one time, more than one partner. Mm-hmm. And that, of course, speaks to my own dysfunctionality, and we'll get into that some other day. What happens is that abusers are very good at verbal abuse, and if they know about your bisexuality, they use that against you, and you internalize that. Whether you know it's not true or not, you begin to feel that perhaps you deserve what you get. And I know in my head that no one ever deserves what they get, but abuse is very insidious, and it does wear on you. And you were just talking about internal biphobia, how others view you and how you're being treated. You actually start internalizing. I think that is a clue here too. Mm-hmm. I think that a lot of bisexual women do not value themselves, and they perhaps end up in these very dysfunctional relationships for other reasons, but they accept them.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, that's my own personal opinion.
Mm-hmm.
I also think that people, abusers, so rapists and stranger rape and domestic, you know, in partner rape and abuse, these people don't have any boundaries, and they really do believe that they can treat us any way we want to, you know, and I think that's part of the issue too. Normal people don't, you know, think, well, she's bisexual, therefore I can have sex with her anywhere I want.
Sure.
Any time, she's, you know, totally open to it. But people that are that way to begin with, and there's a lot of them out there,
mm-hmm.
you know, really take that step forward. You know, I've heard a lot of very sad stories about one in particular really hurt me hard, is because this woman worked with this man for a lot of years, and he seemed like a really great guy. And, you know, she finally agreed to go out with him and, you know, proceeded to date rape her because, you know, she was just a bisexual slut.
Mm-hmm.
And it was, and even though her mind knew what was going on, she still to this, you know, still deals with that PTSD and that internalization of it,
mm-hmm.
you know. Yeah, so I guess that's my opinion on it. I'm not a psychiatrist, too.
That makes a lot of sense. And I think not to discredit that at all, but I also think that some of what may make those numbers look so big is just improper number gathering in terms of the rest of the queer community. I know gay and lesbian domestic violence and sexual assault rates are often underreported.
Yeah.
Particularly when you have two partners of the same gender in a relationship, and people like law enforcement view that as kind of a fair fight or just just kind of an equal-sided argument rather than domestic violence.
Right.
So that's great. That may play a part, but I certainly don't want to diminish how, you know, awful that statistic around bisexual women is.
Yeah, well, I think that if we had more community and more positive messages to give to people that are out there, bisexual women saying, you know, that you're okay, that, you know, that giving that self-value to them may possibly help with those numbers, mm-hmm. you know, because the real sad truth is that we really don't have, you know, we're working on it really hard, but we don't have those resources available for the bisexuals in the LGBT centers and, you know, as support groups. We're working really hard, though.
Mm-hmm.
We really are. So I guess we just kind of got into this subject already. Our depression and suicide rates are really, really high, and for our whole community as a whole, not just for women, for our youth and for our men. And it's difficult. I guess we already just covered that question, really, didn't we?
Yeah, I mean, I could say a little bit more about that. As far as why I think that is, I think lack of community is huge. That's probably my number one answer to most issues around bisexual mental health. Just lack of access to community, or even the idea that a bisexual community exists, leaves people feeling really, really isolated. You know, when I look at the theoretical models for bisexual identity development, I get really frustrated. We have kind of, depending on which researchers you read, there are a few different models of identity development for gay and lesbian identified people, and we've modified some of those for bisexual people. And kind of the general format is pre-contemplation, where I'm not really aware that, I'm not even aware that this might be an identity that fits me. And then I start to get to a point where I'm like, maybe this is not so straight. And then kind of starting to identify with those things. And if things continue to progress, kind of throwing ourselves full force into, yes, this is who I am, and, you know, everything I have has rainbows all over it, and all I want to do is be at Pride all, like, 52 weeks out of the year. You know, if we continue to mature and progress, we get to a point where that becomes more integrated, and so, you know, maybe our entire existence isn't focused on being gay or lesbian, but we start to integrate, like, the rest of life in there, too. When it comes to bisexual people, the model is much the same, but there's this final stage, at least in the very first model that I ever came across, which was continued identity uncertainty. And that made me so angry, because that to me is not an identity development stage.
Yeah.
That is limbo, and that would make anybody depressed. To be continually uncertain about who they are, that does not sound like a complete identity development to me. And I think if I compare the models and compare the differences in that progress, what seems to be missing for a lot of people is that point where I say, this is who I am, and now I fully throw myself into this community so that I can be completely absorbed in it for a little while.
Mm-hmm.
We don't have that. I think that here in Portland, we have a little bit of it, but most people in most places don't have that at all, or don't even know a bisexual community exists, or that there's information out there on being bisexual. And so if we don't have that access in order to make it through that stage, that's where I think the continued identity uncertainty comes from, because you're just kind of stuck developmentally. And one of the most profound positive effects I've seen in the groups that I run is just being able to connect bisexual people with one another. It really seems to diminish that feeling that I'm all alone in this, but like nobody else knows what this feels like. And giving, because they connect with each other and start sharing resources, the few resources that they come to the group with one another, they begin to connect each other with the larger bi community, which is just really amazing to watch.
It is really amazing to watch. Yeah. And I have to agree with you. John is working really hard in D.C. to get Center Bi going up, and it's really becoming quite well done. I mean, quite busy, aren't you, John?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, we have more events planned than I can make sometimes.
Yeah, and I actually found a lovely meetup group here in Portland, which, you know, is another one to add to our resources. It's a fantastic group. Yeah, so that's, and I have to agree with you. I think finding your tribe is an important part of the process. It makes you feel not alone and more right about what you are. You know, you need that validation from others.
About our physical health and our substance abuse rates. The 2020 report actually has an awful lot about bisexual physical health, our HIV rates, as well as our higher smoking rates and higher alcohol usage. Could you talk a little bit more about how that fits into all of what we've been discussing?
Yeah, I mean, substance use rates do tend to run higher among the queer community in general. And so it seems like whatever health issues we have running through the queer community in general seem to be more concentrated within the bisexual community. And I think that cause of all of that tends to be an internalized and institutionalized phobias. So specifically here, we're talking about internalized and institutionalized biphobia. And, you know, if that's coming at you all around, including that bully that's following you all around all the time with internalized biphobia, then we're basically looking at ways to escape that. And if it's internalized, kind of the only way to escape that at that point, if you're not actively working on it with someone or with the support of other people, then it's self-medicating so that you can kind of escape your mind for a while, unfortunately.
I think a lot of us have that experience in the bisexual
yes.
community.
Okay, so what do we need to do? What can we do to save our women in our community? What steps and programs do you think might be effective? And I think we touched on this already, too.
Yeah, I mean, this brings me back to what I said was pretty much my answer. My first answer for everything was I really believe we need more visible bisexual community, as well as, of course, more bisexual or any bisexual specific services. I know they're extremely limited right now. And of course, far, far better training for those of us in the mental health field working with bisexual people.
Thank you. Yes. I'm hopeful that more bisexuals understand and know they do have a larger community behind them and it turns some of these issues into something more manageable. Being proud of your sexuality is an important step in healing. What do you recommend we do as a community to help each other? Again, here you just exactly said that already.
Yeah, my answers to people generally are to reach out to others and be visible. I think, again, if we're coming with this idea of having a more visible bisexual community, one of the things that we talk about in my group a lot is what does it look like? What does it look like to be bisexual, right? Because we have these stereotypes of what does it look like to be very gay or be very lesbian, and kind of the communal idea we've come to is that in order to be more visibly bisexual, you have to just be more out about your identity. And I'd really like to encourage more people to be more out so that the rest of the people who are not quite out there yet can see that and feel a little safer in doing so.
Yes, exactly. Those of us that can be out and proud and visible really should do that for those who cannot be, and show them that it's a safe thing to do. I mean, that isn't what I meant to say, because it isn't really a safe thing to do, but just be an example for them.
Right.
Yeah, you know, I found over the years a lot of people confided in me of the fact that they're also bisexual. But for us, it is, we talk about it all the time. Bisexuals are always having to come out. We're identified usually by the relationship we're in, and a lot of times generally misidentified by that. And so that might seem a hard thing for us to be doing who are out there, and but we just have to, you know, we do just always have to be coming out, and that helps us all. This has been a really great discussion. I think we've learned a lot. I think we probably confirmed a lot of the things we already know, and it's nice to hear it coming from a therapist because we do need our own therapy, because we deal with, you know, we deal with people in our own community day to day that we have to provide some level of peer counseling too. So it's nice to elaborate on this. We really thank you for coming on the show today, and we'd love to have you come back anytime. It's been a great conversation.
Thank you. It's been a pleasure.
Morgan, do you have anything else you'd like to add right now?
Oh, anything else I'd like to add? Well, if you're in the Portland area and you're looking to get a chance to talk about being bisexual and get to know other bisexual people, I definitely invite you to visit my website, which is bisexualtherapist.com, and come join us for some groups.
You also provide counseling for polyamory relationships, and this is fantastic because it's so much needed. Mm-hmm. And so I encourage people in the area who need that kind of help to contact her, and we'll provide all that information on the links for you, okay?
Thanks.
I want to thank you again for all of your help with the BiBrigade and being a bisexual presence at the Portland Pride this year. Very much appreciated. I hope we have a huge participation next year also. We're gaining some momentum on that. Thank you.
Thanks.
Thank you.
All right, everybody, remember, you are not wrong, you're not broken, and you are not alone. You deserve respect, you deserve understanding, and you deserve acceptance just the way you are. You are a human being, and you are bisexual. Goodbye, everyone.
Bye.
Morgan, are you okay with that?
Oh yeah, I thought it was great. Thank you.
So again, I do want to thank you for the work you did for Pride this year. That was fantastic.
Oh, it was such a pleasure. I had such a good time just having people come up and be so excited that we were there. It was great.
I know. It was so great because, you know, I've heard that it hasn't really been very much of a presence there. So I was like so excited. It's like, yeah.
Yeah. Yay.
The views expressed on the Bicast do not necessarily represent those of Binet USA or the Bicast crew.